This is Marketplace Weekend. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We now turn to more from our special series with the BBC, Six Routes to Riches, a look at the challenges and opportunities people face as they make a living around the world. We're on a tour of six countries at the heart of the changing global economy. Last week, you heard my reporting from Brazil, a country that became a powerhouse, first in commodities, then consumer goods, bringing millions of people out of poverty with new jobs and access to credit, including three generations of one family who are now in the middle class. This week, we're in India, where the International Monetary Fund predicts economic growth will overtake China's. With that growth comes an emerging middle class, but more than 300 million people live in poverty in India. So what does economic mobility look like there, and how do you move up? Here's the BBC's Justin Rolat and Marketplace's David Weinberg. David starts our tour at a weekend motorcycle rally in Delhi.
Just before dawn, I arrive at a parking lot in a mall in South Delhi. A light rain is falling, and slowly, one after another, motorcycle headlights appear at the entrance to the parking lot. By the time the sun comes up, over 100 bikers have arrived, including 20-year-old Vandit Hura, a law student from Noida, the neighboring city of Delhi. He's one of the many bikers here who rides a Royal Enfield, known for its unique sound.
Exactly. So when I was young, I used to run outside my house listening to that sound.
You may not have heard of Royal Enfield, but it's a classic, one of the first motorcycle companies in the world. It now outsells Harley-Davidson. It was originally a British company, but it's now Indian-owned. The brand's success, due largely to sales in India, is one sign of the growing economy here. Another sign is the growth of motorcycle clubs like this one.
Good morning!
Good morning!
That sounds like a Delhi Bikers Fest crowd.
Mohit Aguja is over 6 feet tall, with a dark beard, a red and black motorcycle jacket, and camouflage pants.
Welcome to Delhi Bikers Fest, and this is your fest. Let's have some brotherhood happening today. And let's hope that the gods have mercy on us and stop the rains. So let's get geared up, guys, and let's ride!
The bikes head out of the city in a double-file formation, merging into the chaotic Delhi roads. Rickshaws, bicycles, people pulling carts all converge into a river of traffic. We pass huge malls and towering glass office buildings, companies like Google and Panasonic. We also drive by slums flooded by muddy water and piles of trash being picked at by wild pigs. The ride ends with a party in the rural outskirts of town. While these partying bikers are one example of India's growing middle class, the fact is a huge portion of the population has been left out of the country's economic rise. Over 300 million Indians live below the poverty line. Historically, the key to pulling millions of people out of poverty has been industrialization, factory jobs, the kind that turned China into the world's second largest economy. In India, those jobs never came. And while the success of Royal Enfield is one shining example of Indian manufacturing, it's rare here. Manufacturing only makes up 16% of India's economy. So what will bring India's 300 million people out of poverty? It depends on who you ask. My colleague Justin Rolat is the South Asia correspondent with the BBC. He recently visited Bangalore, where India's renowned IT sector has its own answer to eradicating poverty.
Thanks, David. Bangalore is Asia's answer to Silicon Valley. And software has been one of the great success stories of the Indian economy over the last couple of decades. Some of India's most valuable businesses started life here in the suburb of Koramangala.
You go to any tea shop, coffee shop, you'll find a bunch of people talking business, talking which product development.
But away from the noisy networking, the glittering offices and the trendy boutiques, it is not all glitz and glamour.
Let's see if the guys are in. Hiya, guys. Hello. Shivku I'm looking for.
Shivakumar Ganesan is the co-founder and chief executive of Exotel. Young, fresh face, and dressed down.
Yeah, so I guess this is the Indian version of the Zuckerberg hoodie. So this is a kurta, and this is, I guess, jeans.
the model Indian tech entrepreneur.
Thank you. Please have a seat.
Yes, thank you.
Obscure attic offices like this one house some of the tech businesses being built by India's brightest, the former employees of vast multinationals like Google and Yahoo. Shivku's business essentially uses cloud computing to help growing businesses manage their phone systems.
And how is trade? How are you getting on?
I think in the last 4 months, we've tripled in revenue. We've doubled in size in terms of number of people. So I think good times are here.
As far as Shivku is concerned, there is a world of opportunity out there.
Everybody has fire in their belly and they want to get somewhere in life. Like Sanjit used to be a techie at Cisco, and he currently heads marketing.
So Sanjay, I know this is a kind of crude measure, but compare your job and your income to that of your father. I mean, how different is it?
To be honest, my first job as an intern, not even as a regular employee, the salary I got was more than what my father earned when he retired.
So that kind of suggests this is an incredible transformational moment for India.
Definitely. In fact, one of the employees in our company, I think, is one of the first graduates out of a small remote village in Tamil Nadu. It's a village where when he goes home, we can't reach him. The mobile phones don't work. He gets electricity 2 hours per day. In fact, he has traveled a few kilometers, and for a lot of people, it's like a travel in time, right? You've moved to a city, and he has come in exposure with a lot of opportunities here.
Govind Arajan is the Exotel employee in question, and he says it all started with a very focused mother.
She usually asking me to study and everything. So in this situation, it's only because of her.
What do people in the village think about what you've achieved?
My family is proud of me, so because I'm the only guy who's working as a software engineer from my village, so they're proud.
So in the village, are you a kind of hero to people in the village?
Not like that.
I think when he joined, he was a novice, but I think now he is one of the most, the best techies here, I would say. Yeah. He compensated for his, say, lack of exposure earlier with hard work. He used to put in, I would say, 20 hours a day. He was very passionate about what he wanted to achieve. I think that's why he's here.
Leaving the Exotel offices, it struck me that Govind's example really hints at the limits of the revolution we see here in Bangalore. IT is skills intensive, not labour intensive. Here's the thing. How many people would put in the kind of hours Govind has?
So it's just a short drive away from where we've been, and we've pulled into a rather different part of town. It's a really rather swanky residential street with big gates and big villas behind them. This being India, just a few kind of 100 yards away, there's a bit of open land with kind of tents where people are living, a kind of embryonic slum, I guess. Namaste.
I'm here to meet one of the founding fathers of India's technology revolution.
Wow, this is a lovely place.
Thank you.
I've been very curious to come here because I've never been to a billionaire's house before, and I was very keen to find out how, well, I was going to say how the other half lived, but it's the other 1%, if not the other sort of 0.00001%, I suppose it really is. And it's the truth is, if you want to know, they live quite well. That's the answer.
Nandan Nilekani is reckoned to have made $1.5 billion from Infosys, the company he helped found back in 1981. It grew into a world-beating software behemoth that solves IT problems for companies around the world. No surprise, then, that he is a poster boy for techies across India.
You can think of Infosys as the first original and most successful startup that's been there in India. And I think that triggered this whole entrepreneurial revolution because it showed that a bunch of guys from middle-class backgrounds could build a large company. And I think today Bangalore has really become an entrepreneurial hotspot.
It was a very different story when he started out.
It took 2 years to get a phone connection. You couldn't travel abroad without permission from the central bank. It was a very difficult place to do business. But we persevered, and fortunately for us,
By about 91, the economy opened up and, you know, capital became accessible. And technology made it possible to sit in Bangalore and work on software projects for the whole world.
And it's interesting because there were real parallels with Silicon Valley, because not only have you got the kind of gravity of a successful kind of tech city, which draws people in, you know, draws talented programmers and entrepreneurs in, but you've also got capital because you've got people who've made money in business looking for new ideas to invest. So you've got like Sequoia Capital or, you know, those guys in California. You've got a very similar kind of ecology, if you like, for developing businesses.
Oh, absolutely right. I think what you're seeing is the second or third generation of companies, and you have many successful people from the first and second generation who made money and are investing it back as angel investors or early stage or mezzanine or whatever kind of funding there is.
Okay, but what about the fact that the IT industry doesn't employ anywhere near as many people as a sector like manufacturing? Well, Nilekani's next job was an effort to address that. It's something that rarely turns up on the CV of any entrepreneur, let alone a billionaire. He took a job with the government.
I quit my job at Infosys. My fellow co-founder was very generous, saying, yes, please go and serve the country kind of thing. And we built a very, very advanced technology platform to give every resident a unique ID.
This is not just an ID card, but a digital system that uses fingerprints and iris scans to register India's 1.25 billion people on a single database. It offers a huge opportunity to integrate Indians en masse into the financial system, as well as connecting them directly to government services.
So now we are seeing a lot of applications emerging, direct cash transfer, subsidy reforms. All kinds of applications are coming. So we see in the long term that this is not just about a product, but a platform which enables innovation on top of it.
The scale of Mr. Nilekani's ID project is truly vast. When he stepped down from the job in March of last year, about 600 million people had been issued IDs. Today, it's closer to 770 million, and they are adding to that number at a rate of about 20 million a month. Jayashri Sengupta is an economist with the independent think tank, the Observer Research Foundation. She believes the project could be truly transformational.
Now the government is saying that, you know, we'll have biometric identity card, the Aadhaar card, and the mobile phone, and the bank account, which Modi has started for the poor. These three things combined will change India. And you can have direct subsidies rather than, you know, through various schemes of government where there are lots of leakages.
But when you look at the numbers behind India's economy, there are some eye-popping statistics. Just how few Indians are in formal employment, for example.
92% of the labour force is in the informal sector.
So just 8% of the population
only 8%
is
in the organised sector. And 92% have no insurance, no guarantee of job, can turn them out any time. And so that they're without any social safety net.
So how can the 92% be drawn into the formal economy? After his weekend hanging out with Delhi's bikers, David Weinberg went to East Delhi to meet some Indians with a very different set of priorities.
In India, as in much of the developing world, there has been a migration of people from rural villages to the city. Only 68% of rural Indians can read. So when they arrive in cities, jobs are incredibly hard to find. So many of them end up here. This is a market in East Delhi. There are stalls with kids' backpacks, pots and pans, clothing, and lots of street food. These vendors make up a huge part of the informal economy. Down a side street, I meet Lalchan Kashyap. He sells a kind of street food called chaat. Every night, he sets up his equipment in the same spot he's had for the last 23 years. He uses a big metal cooking surface shaped like a large satellite dish. In the center is a shallow pool of ghee, or clarified butter, that Kashyap uses to fry potatoes. Aloo tikki, mashed potatoes made into a patty, then fried in ghee, and smothered in masala, tamarind, and coriander chutney, garnished with shredded cabbage, radish, ginger, and carrots, and finished with a squeeze of lemon. It is spectacular. It also takes a lot of work.
The prep work that he does at home starts in the morning. They wake up, they clean, The previous night they boiled chickpeas to make the chutney, and then in the morning he starts by making the golgappas. Then he makes the flour, he sort of mixes it and lays out. Then he boils the potatoes, and then they come to the shop.
And so, like, how much will you make in a, on a good night?
एक दिन में आपके कितनी आमदनी हो जाती है?
कितनी होती है आमदनी तो मैंने कभी से देखा नहीं.
After he pays everything, actually he says he's never really considered how much money he makes on a daily basis, but 400-500 is what he's left over with after he pays everybody.
That's about $8 a day. He works 7 days a week and makes just enough to cover his living expenses, food and rent in a 2-room apartment that he shares with 9 other family members. $8 a day puts Kashyap's income at 6 times the global poverty line set by the World Bank. So he's not poor by that standard. But if we use the basic definition of middle class as having some amount of leisure time and disposable income, Kashyap is clearly not middle class either.
When you talk about urban poor, most are entrepreneurs. The street vendors are entrepreneurs. But one part of the problem is increasing their income. But a major part of their problem is stopping the drain of income, because there are many extortion rackets.
Arvind Singh is head of NASFI, the National Association of Street Vendors in India. NASFI's strength is in its numbers. There are over 550,000 dues-paying members across India. They offer free legal services. They've gotten legislation passed. They give training about hygiene and help vendors access financial services. If efforts like this succeed in bringing the huge number of informal workers into the middle class, economist Jayashree Sengupta believes they could be an internal economic engine that drives India's growth.
I absolutely believe that, and I think China is going that way, because China has realized that export-led growth has led to pollution, where people are suffocating. We've also experiencing that. We are experiencing it in Delhi. It's no point in, you know, depending on the export growth. We have a huge market, 1.2 billion people. So give money in their pockets so they can buy our own things.
Much of the work that NASFI has done has been to prevent vendors from losing money to extortion. Actually, raising their income is a more difficult task. One way they do that is by organizing street food festivals to improve the image of street vendors, make them more appealing to locals and tourists. Kashyap worked one of those festivals. His food was so popular, he was invited to represent India at a street food festival in Singapore, a burgeoning foodie world capital. The event takes place on April 6th. It will be Kashyap's first trip outside of India. In Delhi, I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
And I'm Justin Rowlatt for the BBC.
Next week, we'll be in China, the world's second largest economy. You can catch up on our series. Just visit marketplace.org and click on the Six Routes link. You'll get up-to-the-minute reports and pictures from our travels. The hashtag on Twitter is Six Routes. That's the number 6 and the word roots.